There's a mirror up here. I'm not 100% sure why we have a, well, I do know. Any of you know why there's a mirror that's up here and that is now sitting on the organ? So the organist that's facing that way can look in the mirror and see what's going on out here. Keep an eye on everybody. But the mirror is for something else this morning. I want you to look in the mirror. I'm going to pan along here. Look at yourselves in the mirror here. Can you see yourselves? All right, it's a pretty small mirror. But do any of you look in the mirror?
Oh, yeah.
In Jesus' time, mirrors weren't really. I mean, the best thing they had was if you took a piece of brass and you polished it as best you could. Have you ever seen a reflection in a brass mirror? It's pretty darn poor. There's some indications that mirrors came into being in the second or the fourth century China. But do you know when the common mirror for the common people, it became cheap enough for the average person? Take a guess. When do you think that happened? 1900 was a guess. What did you guess, Paya? 1950? Now, don't be naughty. About 1835, they figured out a method of silvering glass so that it would stick. They could do that. Very wealthy people could have glass flattened and something applied to the inside, but it was incredibly expensive. And it was not until about 1835 that they had a process that worked. How about our reflections in water? Have you ever looked at your reflection in water? Have you ever seen a really good reflection of yourself in water? I mean, clear enough to, I don't know that I can picture any of those times when that was the occasion, but certainly happens. You remember Narcissus, the story of Narcissus, looked in the water, saw his own reflection, fell in love with himself. It's the origin of the word narcissism. So anyway, mirrors. How do you want to be treated in the world? How do you want to be treated? Do you smile at yourself in the mirror? When you go home, I want you all to go into the mirror there and smile at yourself. Have any of you ever seen me smile? I hope so. I hope so. I smile usually when I make a really stupid joke up here, don't I? But that smile of happiness and joyousness and full of lifeness. Melissa has a smile that just absolutely thrills me to the depth of my being. She has a good smile. She says, I might be biased. But now while you're at home and you're busy smiling at yourself in the mirror and the rest of the people in your family are thinking, oh dear, what's wrong with them now? Now turn and instead of smiling at yourself, scowl at yourself in the mirror. I was going to try and scowl here, but I don't think I better even go down that path. You think that might be kind of dangerous, but scowl at yourself. I had a colleague that I was in seminary with, and she was third career. She'd raised her entire family, and after all the family was grown, she had gone to seminary, so she was not a spring chicken is what I'm trying to say. And she was a sweet lady. She had worked as a librarian. So, and she fit that stereotype, and she was just always a sweet and kind and whatever. And 3 years in seminary with this woman, and on the last year of seminary, something happened. She had a friend, and they had some kind of a disagreement, and I saw her scowl at her friend. And it was the harshest thing I have ever seen in my life. And it just did not seem possible that her face could do that. It startled me deeply. I don't know how that resolved. I don't have the rest of that story. It doesn't matter, but I am sure I have scowled in my life. Scowl out of anger or out of fear or but this is not life, this is darkness. So which visage do you want to present to one another? Which way do you want to present yourself to people? Yes, we are talking about the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's a simple, straightforward one. The kids just did it in the vacation Bible school thing, didn't they? It seems like straightforward. We don't talk about it all that much. And intriguingly, although this is a core teaching for what we're about, although this is a central tenet of what Jesus is talking about, although this walks to the very heart of the issue, we didn't have it until about the 17th century. The Golden Rule didn't exist till the Anglicans came up with it and began to talk about it as a concept and naming it as such. Excuse me. You would think I would do this in the spring, not in the middle of winter, but here's. Now, what's intriguing is we didn't have the Golden Rule back in antiquity, but we had what was called the negative affirmation of the Golden Rule. That is the opposite. And there's a papyrus from 600 years before Christ, and it says, "That which you hate to be done to you, do not do to another." It's the same thing, isn't it? It's the flip side of it, but it's saying the same thing. It's the ethic of reciprocity. That's what it's called, the Golden Rule. Now, I was teasing you, that wasn't really filmed, that the youth video wasn't really filmed in Richard's backyard, it was Stephanie's. But you don't know, you recognize that she has that much lake space, but you know, she makes it work, and it, you know, and she has two dogs to pull you around and what have you. So how do we turn that and focus that? And how do we pause to say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you? I have to tell you, one of my dreams for years has been to have a doctor call me and say they'd like to come in and talk to the pastor and make an appointment to come in. And I would say, okay, here, come in at 10. And then I would make them sit out there till 10:15 or 10:30 before I let them in. But that's not okay. The Golden Rule just says right here that this is right on out. I can't, even though that's something that has happened to me that I don't appreciate at all, and it's one of my pet peeves, to be honest. But that which I hate having done to me, don't do that to someone else. And sometimes we don't think about that. But maybe we need both sides of that ethic of reciprocity that says, do unto and don't do to. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Oh, that's a tough one. That is so hard. I am the worst when I'm behind the wheel of my car. You know that I'm a perfect driver. You know for a fact that I can show, if you would just film me driving around, people would be so benefited. That's a joke. But boy, do I would be a harsh traffic cop. You'd get tickets for every little infraction. And I recognize that about myself. And one of the rules that I've discovered is, especially when I see a little old man driving along, I try and picture it being my dad. My dad was not a perfect driver. He was a really good driver. But we were driving down the interstate one day, Glenwood Canyon. We're driving through the canyon, and he was driving along, and there was a state patrolman driving. And so he just went over in the left lane and went around him and went back in the right-hand lane, kept going, driving along, and all of a sudden we're getting pulled over. He got a ticket for not signaling. And Dad says, "I didn't know you had to signal if there's nobody else around." He was a little bit frustrated with it, but more just, I just didn't know that. I was just curious. Who would do that in front of a state patrolman intentionally? And what state patrolman, well, he was making a traffic contact. And that's okay. I was riding, there were three of us chaplains traveling with a detective from Fort Morgan. We were going to a conference, a teaching seminar in Loveland, Colorado. So you drive up and down I-76. So we drove to the conference, and we're driving back, and we're chattering along, and the detective was getting very quiet. And I wasn't really paying attention, but the car in front of us, and it was going pretty slow, and then it'd go off, and pretty soon it's clear across the middle line, then it'd get back in the lane again and drive for a while, and then it was starting to go off the edge, and then it would come back in, and we watched it for a little while, and he says, "Oh no." So he got on the radio, he says, "Are there any units from Fort Morgan close enough that they can," we were in the county at that point in time, and his authority included that county. And there were nobody close. Was there any Colorado State Patrolman anywhere close? No, there was nobody. He says, "Aw, nuts." You see, he was in a business coat. He shirt and tie and a coat. He was not armored. He was not wearing his personal armor. He was not wearing his duty belt. He was not prepared to make a traffic stop. It's a dangerous situation. And so he turned on the lights on his car. He says, "We got to make the stop." And the car kept going. And it was getting kind of worrisome to me. And he just laughed. He says, "I can't believe it. We know what we're thinking here. You know, this is a telltale drunken driver." So finally he says, "All right." And so he turns on the siren. So we drive probably for 30, 45 seconds before all of a sudden the driver realizes the siren is referring to them, looks in the rearview mirror, oh my goodness, went right onto the side and came to a stop. So he gave me his backup weapon, I kid you not, and he said, "Okay, we're going to go do this." And he says, "Dispatch, I'm going to go make contact." And boy, we were tense. And he got up there and he did all of the correct procedures to protect himself. And then he's turned and he's just bent over and he's just kind of leaning in the window, just chatting away with this person. And we kind of relaxed then and so chatted for a minute or so. And then then you see him reach in and he driver's license and proof of insurance. And he comes back and he's shaking his head and he's chuckling. And we're looking at him. And he said, "She's a school teacher. Yesterday was the last day of school. She got all finished with all of her paperwork, worked all the way through the night getting all of her paperwork done and turned in and packed. Now she's trying to drive home, and she says she's fallen asleep. She's absolutely exhausted, and she's just nodding off at the wheel. It's not a drunk driver at all." So he called in her license. It was all clear and everything, and he chuckled and went up and gave it to her and says, "You know," yeah. It put the fear in her. It was a good thing because we watched her take the next exit to pull over to get some coffee at a rest area or at a restaurant there along the way. But it was this interesting thing. We had all made judgments and have to in that situation to be prepared, to be aware. But a cop could easily have arrested her and done all kinds of things. But treat someone as you'd like to be treated. It's a hard thing to do, especially in law enforcement, especially when situations can be very, very dangerous. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Same game, same place there. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. I'm working on that. I think I'm better at forgiving than allowing myself to be forgiven. See, I've made some mistakes. I hate to tell you that as your pastor in the pulpit, but I've made some mistakes in life that I wish I could take back, that I could do over. Some of those things I've said or failed to say at the right times. Give, and it will be given unto you. Well, we understand that one. We're not always good about it, but we understand it. In this day and age, we hear things on the news. We hear stories. And I am always read a news story, and immediately I want to see a picture of the person so that I can judge for myself whether this person is guilty or innocent just by looking at the picture. It is the silliest exercise I do. And I recognize it, so it won't go anywhere. And fortunately, I have no power to use that. But it's that tendency to say, I can figure all of this out. I know ahead of time. I can discern what's happening. Have you ever seen a movie? It's so old. Bowen Hadley, you're right on out of this, but it was a black and white movie back in the day called 12 Angry Men. Classic film. Henry Fonda, E.E. Marshall, Lee J. Cobb, is that how you, yeah. Anyway, there's a jury pool. They have a court hearing, and they've been called to the jury, and this young man is accused of this stuff. And they get in the jury room, and they vote. And everybody says, yeah, hang him, you know, he's guilty. And 11 out of 12. And Henry Fonda says, well, I'm not so sure. Oh, they're angry at him? Have you ever been the one out of a group that is a standout, that's on the other side of the coin, that doesn't agree with the majority? It's a lonely place to be. And Henry, they flesh this out in the film. Of course, the film goes on, and gradually he makes arguments, and he challenges assumptions, and he challenges judgments, and he challenges some of the judgment that comes from this young man's ethnicity. And by the end of it, of course, they exonerate the young man. It's a brilliant film. It's still very classic and important. And it's an indictment of us about judging and about rush to judgment and about the dangers, but the rightness of standing up even when you're in the minority. This is intriguing that we have this before us, this golden rule. But it isn't just something that Jesus came up with. It's in the Old Testament. We heard Diana read it out of Psalm 37. Do not fret because of the wicked. Do not be envious of wrongdoers, for they will soon fade like the grass. Do not fret because of the wicked. I read that and I blinked a couple times. Do not fret because of the wicked. Sounds like it's a little unsettling to me, but yeah. Fret in the Hebrew, the word is kara. My Hebrew is atrocious, so just wave and say, okay, that's fine. But the definition, to be hot, to burn, to be angered, to be kindled, that's not fretting in my book. But it's the term that's being used here. This is, do not do these because of the wicked. Do not be angered and burn. And we understand what they're talking about. Fretting is what happens in mobs. Mobs fret and they ignite each other, and mob violence and mob mentality takes over, and horrible things happen. Do not fret. I ought to have a poster made up of that. Do not fret. Knowing the Hebrew word and what it meant in the Hebrew definition, don't do that. Leviticus 19:18 says, you shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. We've heard that somewhere. Isn't that somewhere in the New Testament? Maybe I thought Jesus invented that. Isn't it lovely when we see that what an incredible scriptural scholar he was, and how God is God through all ages? Love your neighbor as yourself. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Israel and Palestine today. I was in seminary, it was the 80s. Bowen Hadley, that's before your birth, isn't it? We had life back then, to electricity, this modern telephone thing. But back in the age, and we were studying, and the professor out of the blue, New Testament, said, he says, I think that Israel might be one of the most unstable or destabilizing influences in the world. And I was startled. I mean, I was not at that point at all a student of the nations and of the different things going on between countries and what have you. But I was startled. I assumed as biblical people, we would be staunch allies and supporters of Israel in all things at all times. But Israel hasn't always done the right thing. And it's okay to name that and to call out what's happening there, the tragedies of how the Israelis treated the Palestinians to get to where they are, and how the Palestinians reprised that and treated the Israelis, and how the Israelis treated the Palestinians because the Palestinians and the Palestinians treated the Israelis and the Israelis treated the Palestinians. My mouth's getting tired. But that back and forth is exactly what the Bible is saying don't do. See where it's gone? See where it's taken us? See where we've gotten to? Hatred and reprisals. The Hatfields and the McCoys. So here's the mirror. I don't know if you could see yourself in it or not. I'll just kind of pan it around. See if any of you are smiling or not. From up here, I get a pretty good view of you all, you know. Some of you were napping out there a couple times. But what view do you want to present to the world? How do you want to be seen? I want to be seen as a Christian. And there are two views of Christians. There's condemning and judging and holier than thou Christians. And there are others that are not. And do not do to those that you don't want done to you. Pretty straightforward stuff. Those who wait for the Lord will inherit the land. Ah, there's good news. Good news that is mirrored by Jesus Christ himself, who brings us gifts of love, unconditionally, and salvation. Amen?